Improvising great scenes online is as easy as having a conversation. We just need to get out of our own way, and I want to help you do that. I want to help you improvise great scenes online, scenes that are funny and grounded in reality, using your emotions and making strong character choices that come from you and your own unique life experiences. You don't need to force anything. You can take the pressure off yourself to be clever, because you know what? You're enough. And that is what my Artist Low Comedy classes are all about. My next one starts Friday, October 8th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. To register, go to my website, jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Oh, hey everybody, Jimmy Corain here, host of Improv Nerd. We have a great episode for you today, especially if you like musical improv. Our guest is Laura Hall. She is the musical director of the hit TV show, Whose Line Is It Anyway? I always try to pluralize that for some crazy reason. And she got her start at the Second City here in Chicago back in the 80s. She's worked at all the theaters, IO Chicago, IO West, The Annoyance, and many, many other theaters. And she tours around with her husband, Rick Hall, teaching musical improv, not only for the musician part, but also for the improvisers part. And they're great, great teachers. She has just created a new online video course called A Musical Guide to Improv Comedy. You can't have Laura on the podcast without talking about Whose Line Is It Anyway? And we asked her about Wayne Brady, and she tells us why he is such a savant at improvising songs. We also discussed why rhyming gets in the way of improvising songs, and she shows us a way to not let that happen. And I actually do it, and I think I do a pretty good job of it. So it's a really fun exercise, and you know, she does a great job of explaining it to her. Also, in this episode, it's a super, super surprise, and I'm really happy about it. Her husband, Rick Hall, joins us later in this episode. So, and I get to improvise a song with Rick, and he also gives us the perspective of the improviser. She comes more from the musical director. So this is just such a great episode. We get both sides of, we get the musical director's point of view, and we get the improviser's point of view on creating musical improv. Before we get to the episode with Laura, I just want to let you know, last night was the Emmys here in the States. I love saying that because I know there's people out there who are in Europe and in different parts of the country and the world who listen to this podcast. And I just like to say States because it makes me sound like I'm from England. And secretly, I wish I was from England. I really appreciate English comedy. So last night were the Emmys, and that's our big, that's for television. And I just wanted, Lauren handed me a list. And Lauren is my wife, but she helps me research and goes over the questions before I ask them to a guest. But she wants to be, her official title is head of interns. And right now we don't have any interns, but she is the head of the interns. And she gave me this list, and I was just blown away. All these people had improv who were nominated. Of course, some won. And I'm just going to run down this list really quickly. It's mind-blowing of people who either won last night or were nominated for an Emmy and had an improv background. Stephen Colbert, Jon Favreau, Aidy Bryant, Cecily Strong, Bowen Yang, Kate McKinnon, Jason Sudeikis, who actually won for I'm going to get the name of the show wrong, Laszlo. I can't think of it now. Someone help me out. He won it, and he thanked Mick Napier, an improv teacher here, and you know, everyone knows Mick Napier, so I don't have to, but that's a great honor. Amber Ruffin and Ashley Nicole Black, all of these people had improv backgrounds. As someone, Colbert won, or his show won, so congratulations to all the nominees, and for showing us how we can take improv to the next level if we choose to. You know, some of us just want to do podcasting. So, like myself. All right, enough about this. You're going to love this episode. Laura is so good at explaining and making it simple. Musical improv, which, you know, I'm intimidated by. And then later in the episode, we're joined by her husband, Rick Hall, who just I watched, you know, in Chicago on the main stage and looked up to him and that whole cast. And so he joins us and he shares us the improv portion of it. And he's very articulate about improv and he makes it easy and fun. And I actually do a song with him. So you are going to love this episode. I love this episode. And believe me, I'm terrified of musical improv. And I love this episode. Here it is. Enjoy it. The Laura Hall with special guest Rick Hall episode. Enjoy.
He's a nerd. He's a nerd. Oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd.
Laura Hall, thank you so much for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me, Jimmy.
Let's start with growing up in Wheaton. You were 12 years old, and Wheaton was a suburb of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And your parents at 12 years old take you down to the city to see a main stage show at Second City. And the person that is most memorable to you is Fred Kaz, the musical director.
Yes, which is very telling. You know what I mean? That's who I remember. I don't remember who else was in the cast, but I remembered Fred.
Why was Fred so memorable to you?
I'd seen theater. My mom had taken me to musicals and stuff too, but it was the way that the music interacted with what was happening on stage. I think that I found so fascinating the way it was sort of woven in, you know?
And at that point you had probably taken piano lessons and done a lot of musical stuff.
I hadn't done a lot more than lessons, and I'd done a few recitals and stuff, but I wasn't playing in bands yet or anything. That was high school. But I was writing incredibly difficult pieces for my sister to play on the flute that I was going to accompany and she was going to have to play, but I hadn't had a lot of musical experience. But my mom did. She took us to the symphony, to the ballet, to the theater. She was really great about exposing us to different things, you know?
And then you said in high school, you started to play in bands and stuff. Is that where you started to get more of the bug of being a musician?
Definitely. Definitely. And when it came time to go to college, I really debated the whole, do I study music, which is a difficult way to make a living, or do I do something more practical? Do I be a teacher? Do I, you know? And so I flip-flopped around a lot because, like most people, I didn't have enough faith in my abilities. I was nervous about the idea of trying to make a living doing something so challenging as being an artist, you know? But I ended up on the 6-year plan in college because I kept flopping around. And finally, my dad was like, just do it. You want to study music, just do it.
And so how do you end up then at Second City?
So while I was finishing college, I was finally like, yeah, I'm studying music. I'm doing it. And that was in Chicago. I was on the north side at Mundelein, which is now part of Loyola. And my sister was working at the restaurant next door to Second City. And the box office guy at Second City wanted to date my sister. So he got me a job. My first job there was as a coat check girl, which is such a Chicago job, right?
Right, right, right.
But it was perfect for a student because you would be really busy when everyone's coming in. Then you had like an hour and 15 or something while the show went on and I could study. But I had to stay down there, you know, so I could study. And then they would come and pick up their coats. Then I got promoted later on to be a waitress. And it was for me really like, this is a college gig. This is to, you know, be paying the bills while I'm in school. Even being immersed in improv like that, I didn't really see it as what I was going to do. You know what I mean? I was studying composition. I was still doing a lot of other things. But I was so fascinated by, you know, it was Fred Kass and Ruby Streak were the two musicians then. And I was a terrible waitress because I'd be like, oh, that's so cool how they're, oh, I've got to serve my drinks, you know. So I sort of got sucked into it by immersion, you know.
And then the Second City recognizes your talent because after the shows are over, you could drink for free and you kind of set up a piano bar at the main stage.
Yeah. And so some nights we would sit around and just, you know, just sing songs together. And the incredibly ridiculous policy of letting everyone drink for free after work.
Not good with improvisers. Okay.
Yeah. Not a good business model. Certainly.
No.
So everybody, they knew I played from that. So I never auditioned. When I made the transition into being a musical director for the touring company, I never auditioned or anything. They were just like, oh, you play and you know the culture, so go. And so they started sending me on the road. And I really had no training. It was sort of just they expected that I had absorbed it by then.
And Fred Kass gives you a great piece of advice because you start out playing very timidly.
Yes, I was very uncertain in the beginning and just so like, oh, I don't want to get in anyone's way, which I think a lot of beginning improvisers can have that. I think I would say, especially women, I see it more in women, you know, where like, oh, I don't want to mess up what someone else is doing, you know. So the first show I played so quietly, my cast afterwards were like, were you playing? Because I was so hesitant. So Fred was the one who said to me, if there are six actors in the cast, you're the seventh improviser, which was such a good piece of advice. Like as the musician, you are making offers, receiving offers, reacting to what they're doing, but you're also making offers for them. You're not in the way, you're part of the whole fabric. And it was such good advice for me for understanding the role of where the music was within the show.
So what would you tell a team, you know, a group about the musical director in a show? We got Fred's thing about, okay, you're the seventh player. What would you tell people that improvise on a team about the musical director that you'd like them to know?
First of all, that same concept that the musician is a player just like them. Also that the music supports what they're doing. And so if they can allow themselves to be connected to the music, particularly underscore, but also like improvising songs, if they can be connected to the music helps, the music supports everything they're doing. And sometimes I think people are like, oh, I can't hear the I can't focus on that and be focused on my scene partner. But it's like, you almost don't even have to focus consciously on the music, especially with underscoring. We're like the stealth player. You know what I mean? We're the music is the sort of the subliminal emotional thing that's happening under the scene. So you don't have to even necessarily concentrate on it. You just have to be open to feel what you feel.
And that's what I've experienced sometimes is, and you talk about underscoring and connection. Do you mean is the player up there, if you're playing something sad, that to embrace that emotion, because that's going to actually help you heighten the emotion?
Exactly. And there's that give and take, just like any other offers that happen in improv. So, you know, you might start out with a character that feels sad to me. And so I start heightening it with the music. And then you might go deeper into it. You know what I mean? Like, so there is that way that it can heighten, and together you're going down the path. Together you're discovering the character in the scene.
So, but what's very common, and I see this in beginner improvisers when they're using a musical director, is you'll underscore something and they'll almost be like deer in the headlights. You know, it's like, it's a distraction. It's like, you know, they're, you know, someone, you know, drop something in the room and they don't know how to react. What's the best way to deal with something like that if you're a new improviser?
Yeah, part of it is just to remind them that it's okay. That, you know what I mean? Like that the music is happening and it's okay. I think sometimes for beginner improvisers, if you start underscoring, even if you're playing quietly, they think you expect them to sing and like right that minute. Like I've literally had, you know, I'll just barely, you know, you know, they're like trying to sing in there and it's not time for a song yet. It's like the underscore and the songs can have a natural rhythm. So like allow yourself to just live in that rhythm. You don't have to sing just because someone's playing, and you don't have to, like I said, even almost put conscious energy into listening to the music, just sort of be open to it. It's like the way underscore works in a movie, right? When the underscore is heightening the emotions of a movie, most of the time the audience isn't even consciously noticing. They're just noticing what they're feeling. And it's sort of the same for the actors. If you just let yourself feel it, that's good. And then underscore might turn into a song. It might just be underscore. Like we'll find that together.
Because now that I'm thinking about this, when I started out, and this was in the 80s, it's the same time because we first met at The Annoyance. Every show, you know, I did Improv Olympic and Second City, you know, when I was in the training center there, every show had a musical director. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden there was a trend where there was no musical director.
Right.
You think that because of that, there is some confusion when you start to underscore, people think, oh, I've got to sing just because I'm hearing the piano.
Yeah, I do. I think it's like we've sort of, people are out of the habit of it. We also have the advantage that we came up in Chicago and there was a, you know, deep and wide improv scene there, you know, and actually, you know, it still is going on strong, but it was going strong in the 80s when we were coming up, right? You know, The Annoyance was the new kid on the block and all that. And, but so there was a culture, we were used to it. People were used to it. But because I think what happens now is because a lot of people, there aren't enough improv musicians for how many improv groups there are. And so they just get used to doing it without a musician. You know, if you're on a college team in Rolla, Missouri, you just do it. You don't have a musician. So you just aren't coming up in that culture. You're just not used to it. And so then if you do get a musician, for a lot of people, it's like incredibly exciting, but you will also have the people who are like, oh, what do I do?
And so I'd like to talk about your video series, A Musician's Guide to Improv Comedy. How did you decide to come up with that?
Well, part of it was because, you know, my husband, Rick, and I teach musical improv from the actor side, and we've been doing that for several years. We travel around the country and we do workshops, we play festivals, that kind of stuff. And what happens so often is that people say, oh my gosh, I love this so much. Our team loves this so much, but we don't have a musician. You know, when we go back home, we don't have a musician, so we can't keep doing it. So sometimes people work with tracks or sometimes people work a cappella, but it's completely different to have a live musician with you. And there were troops that wanted musicians, and sometimes they'd even have a musician who was willing. Like, say, if they're a college team, you might have a music major who's like, I'll try it. But they don't know how to train the musician for the specifics of improv. You know, it's like the actors don't know how to tell them what they need. And so there's this sort of gap. And then there's just not that many places that teach the musician side of it, right? Lots of places teach the actor side of improv, but very few places teach the musician side. And so it came out of that need, you know, and that especially if you are in on your college team in Rolla, Missouri, and you're not necessarily going to be able to get to Chicago and get training at Second City or something, that this was something you could do on your own and with your team. So that was the idea behind it. I'd been wanting to do it for several years, and then the pandemic was the, oh, now I have time.
And for somebody who has, let's say they're playing piano, maybe they haven't done improv, and they're like, well, we got this friend of ours who can play piano. Is that something that they can pick up pretty quickly to do?
Yes. Yeah, I kind of compare it to learning how to play guitar. Like you can, most people can learn like three basic chords on guitar and start strumming and play something, right? Pretty quickly. Then of course, there's a lot more you can learn about it, but you can get started quickly. Does that make sense? And so I really feel like if someone goes through this course of mine, which they could do easily in a month, they can definitely get started with their team. Not that there wouldn't be more that they would want to, you know, keep growing and learning, but they for sure could get started with their team. So part of what I'm teaching is like the quick start. Like, here's what you could do for your first show, how to get by. But then here's also a lot more that you can do, like more subtlety. So it's for beginners who've never done it, but it's also for people who've done it, but want to get better at it, want to go deeper into it.
And you've been the musical director on Whose Line Is It Anyways for 17, all the seasons, right?
17 all the American seasons, yeah.
So for somebody who was like, you know, in college, it's going to be difficult to make a living. You've gotten, for a musical director at improv, this is like you're at the pinnacle, right? You know, how did you get that job?
Well, that was also a Second City connection. So my friend Ron West, who I had toured with at Second City, he had done some of the British versions of Whose Line, right? Because it was a British show for several years before they brought it to the States. And he had been like the American guest, you know, on the British show. So when they came to the States, they wanted some American connections to help them with casting and stuff and with finding a musician because they had no idea. So Ron recommended me. I got to audition with Wayne Brady and Brad Sherwood. And all three of us got hired out of that audition. So it was really the classic example of we all made each other look good. You know what I mean? We all brought what we had and we made each other look good and we all got hired, which, you know, is the, like, you know, sometimes those improv auditions, everyone's so busy making themselves look good because they're thinking, well, it's about me getting it, but we all made each other look good.
When I think of the quintessential improv make 'em up songs, it's got to be Wayne Brady. What makes him so good at it?
Well, I mean, he really is like a savant. You know what I mean? Like there's the rhyming piece, which he's incredible at. And it's like the rhymes just like tick for him. They just tick through his mind that he's picking and choosing. You know, a lot of people, when we're rhyming, we're like, you know, we're barely getting from rhyme to rhyme. Rhyming is a whole nother issue though to talk about because it certainly is not the only prerequisite to doing improv songs. But he's a fantastic rhymer. There's that. He also has a really fantastic voice and he's good at movement, right? He's been on Broadway, right? He's a great singing talent. And then the third piece is that he works at it. He works to study different genres and different singers because we do so much of that on Whose Line. And so he spends the time to really think about how does an opera singer sing differently than Rihanna, sing differently than a ragtime artist in the 20s. And he puts time and energy into that that sort of research. So he's like the triple threat. He's got this natural ability, but then he also works really hard at it. I admire him so much. One of the things, though, I say when we're teaching music improv is, if you think, well, I could never do what Wayne Brady does, no one can. I've worked with so many musical improvisers, and I've never worked with anyone who's sort of got his, like, savant level of talent. So there's that.
Talk a little about rhyming. I think for me and most improvisers who are intimidated still to do musical improv, they're like, well, I don't really rhyme that well.
And I think people think of that first, you know, with improvised songs. And certainly if you're playing a game like a hoedown or an Irish drinking song, those are rhyming games, right? That is all about the rhyme. And in fact, the rhyme is the top priority and the storytelling kind of is at the bottom, right? But if you're doing songs that happen organically, say you're doing a narrative form like an improvised musical, or you're doing a Herald that has music that comes in, and the scene and the songs grow organically out of the scenes, right? So you've already established characters. You've already set up the scene. We know who we are. We know what we want. Then the storytelling, the character, that's the top priority. And the rhyming is the bottom priority. And I always tell this to people in workshops and they never believe me, but you can rhyme in those kinds of songs. You can rhyme as little or as much as you want. Right? So if rhyming is going to derail your story, you literally can sing without rhyming. That doesn't mean you're not listening to the form of the music. So you're not just blah, 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 blah. You're still singing something musical. But the rhyming, people will not even notice. Rick is the king of not rhyming when he's singing, and people never notice. What people do notice is if you're going like, first I had a dog, then I had a frog. We went to the park and it was dark. And you know what I mean? Like, who cares, right? You haven't sung anything. You've basically just tripped from rhyme to rhyme. But you can sing, you know, if you're singing about something you care about, if you're singing as a character, right? I was so nervous to come on this show. When Jimmy called me, I didn't know what to do. But I said, oh yeah, I'll do it because I love Jimmy. And I know him from Chicago. Right? I didn't rhyme. I could talk about rhyming all day because it is one of those things that people so stumble over. And the most bizarre thing to me is that people who are nervous about rhyming tend to set themselves up to rhyme more often. It's like because they're thinking about it. It's like the don't look at the birthmark thing. They're thinking about it. It's in the front of their mind. And so they literally will, you know, I went to the park. It was dark. I had a dog and then a frog. They're rhyming so much. And you could, you know, I went to the park. It was a lovely day. I had my dog on a leash. I saw the people that walk in their dogs, but my dog, he couldn't reach them. Right? One rhyme in the whole verse, you know? Anyway, but that's such a big thing that people worry about. And I always am like, sing from your character. Be your character. Sing from your want. Sing from the relationship.
So tell us about singing from your want.
Yeah, so that's the beauty of singing organic songs, right? That I call organic songs that grow out of a scene. If you've set up a character who wants something, who cares about something, who is in relationship with their scene partner, right? All the good things that make a scene work, that's what you can sing about. You can explore, what does my character want? And in a way, in a song, you can explore it even more poetically. Do you know what I mean?
Can you give us an example?
You know, so if you and I are doing a scene and we're a married couple and we're fighting, we're trying to set up the crib for the baby, mm-hmm. and we're fighting about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you're not doing it right. The baby's coming in a month and everything has to be just right. You know, so there's my emotional thing. And your emotional thing might be, you know, like, I didn't even want this kid in the first place. Okay.
You were reading my mind.
So now if we sing and we're singing the duet, whether we're singing a solo or a duet, that's what I'm singing about. You know what I'm singing about? You know, I'm afraid we don't know how to do this. I'm afraid we're going to screw our kid up. I'm afraid of so many things and I don't know how I'm going to work this.
I'm afraid I don't want it. I'm afraid I won't have enough money to support it. I'm afraid that we won't be as close as we were once before.
We can't be close anymore because we gotta take care of our kid.
No sex, no going out to dinner, no movie nights.
I'm afraid that our marriage might not survive this. I'm afraid that we might end up divorced and then I'll have to be a single mom.
I'm afraid she'll leave me and we'll be homeless. I'll be eating out of a dumpster. I'm afraid that I'll die a lonely, lonely man.
Maybe we need to do this together. Maybe we need to do this together.
Me and you and I,
we'll do this together.
I'll give it a try.
We'll give it a try. We'll do
this together.
There you
that
go.
That was easy. That was so easy. And I think the easy part was you identifying what the point of view of my character was and what the point of view of your character was.
Right. Which we would have developed in a scene, right? I mean, that's what the scene leading to the song, we would have explored those things, right? Exactly. So once we have those strong points of view, once we have things we care about, and especially if what we care about is in relationship to each other in some way, that's what we can sing about. And it makes it easy.
Well, I think, Laura, sometimes when people do, and I'm speaking for myself, do musical improv, they kind of short shift the scene to get right to the music. Mm-hmm. What's a way to what we just did, finding that point of view before you start singing?
Yeah, and that is an important part, because for a song to happen out of a scene, you really do have to raise the emotional stakes in some way. We had a student call it once the handshake, which I just love that image. Like, we have to together agree that this is where, you know, that we're raising these emotional stakes. And then the song just happens naturally, right? And whether it's a two-person scene or whether it's a group scene where I'm like, come on, everybody, we're gonna build a barn, you know, whatever the thing is. There has to be some sort of heightening. And sometimes people, I think, are afraid to unpack that as much as it needs to have the song really, you know, in musical theater, they call it earning a song, you know, and it is. And so sometimes it happens with a longer scene for us to get to that point where we know who we are and why we care about what we're doing. Sometimes it happens quickly. You know what I mean? It can, like any scene, it's going to unfold how it unfolds. And then, of course, like if you're doing a Herald or even if you're improvising a musical, some scenes don't turn into songs. They just don't have that impetus. But the sort of rule of thumb is if you haven't heightened the scene, you won't have anything to sing about. You know what I mean? Like, you have to heighten the scene and then it's easy to sing about it. You know, but a lot of times people are like, how do you know what to sing about? You sing about what happened in the scene. It just goes like that. It's completely different if you're doing something like a hoedown or an Irish drinking song, right? That doesn't grow out of a scene. That's us thinking of clever things, and it's a fun, and they're fun games. I don't have any problem with those games, but that's a really different mindset than what you and I just did.
Let's bring in Rick. Rick Hall, everybody.
I would like to add something to what you guys.
Please do.
Because I was standing in the background listening.
He was lurking.
I very often do. Emotional content. We were teaching in Brazil on Zoom. Brazil.
Yes, Brazil.
And they were singing in Portuguese, but they made such commitments emotionally that Laura, it was so fun to watch Laura playing with them, because you could tell when they were coming to the end of the song by their tone. And Laura would end a song with them, and then the translator would tell us what happened. And we're like, That was just right. And it was because they made such an emotional commitment that it was easy for Laura to see where musically where it was going. And it goes for the audience too. The audience is going to go on that trip with you too.
So Rick, when you and Laura go out and teach, you teach it from the actor's point of view, and we're going to do an improvised song. What is important for an improviser to approach a musical improv, especially today? A lot of times people are coming to a kind of, they've done improv for a while and now they're discovering it.
I always say at the beginning of a class, I don't want you to worry about being funny. Don't rhyme if it throws you off. Have a relationship with your other player and sing about how you feel and what you want rather than exposition. But don't worry about being funny. Because we're all funny enough. Everybody who does this is like, oh, yeah, I'm funny. if they get down to, if they really admit it. we're funny enough. But keep the story and the emotional content going between your characters, between you and the other guy or gal. And be honest with what you're feeling. Talk long enough?
You say?
That's great. Laura? Oh, I was just, it's like how some of my favorite improv I've ever seen, like TJ and Dave. And the way that you teach, Jimmy, about slowing down, about taking your time. If we're too busy thinking about being clever and coming up with the next joke, rather than exploring a character, exploring the what's happening between the characters, it's like then we can't ever really get to it because we're thinking about what the clever thing is we're going to say. And yeah, so a big part of what we talk about is that just stay in it, be in the moment, the what's the next logical thing, and that will get you through it. And I think people feel like, especially newer nervous improvisers, I'm busy thinking of this funny thing, or I'm busy thinking about rhyming, and then they're not present. They're missing the gifts they're getting from their other players and the gift they're getting from the musician, right, who is making an offer as well, because they're so, it's like our fear is just the biggest stumbling block. Our own fears about, is our biggest stumbling block to doing good improv.
And something I'd like to ask you, Rick, from the actor's point of view, you say don't worry about being funny. Is there, it seems like that there's a less expectation when improvisers start to sing. That you don't have to be funny, really, do you?
No. I'll take interesting over funny any day, and an audience will too. If you're interesting, we don't have to keep going back to TJ and Dave, but a lot of times they're just interesting, and it's not hilarious. It's just you're following the storytelling. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. So now you and I are going to do something, and I appreciate you doing this. I'm just going to basically follow you because you're a master at this. And we're going to do a song here, right? Is that?
I'll tell you what. Let's do a scene into a song. And one of my favorite things to do, because I've been working with this lady enough, that she'll be underscoring the scene, and we just start singing. And okay. So let's you and I, what would normally be dialogue, let's just sing it. And let's see where it's going to go. We're two guys fishing.
Okay. And are we going to, do you want us to sing from the start, or do you want to?
No, we'll start a scene and we'll see where it goes. Okay.
Okay, great.
So you're two guys fishing.
Okay.
Worms. Always worms, Steve.
Oh, Bill. That's why I haven't caught any today, huh?
Steve, it's not about catching fish. It's about you and me sharing this special time. You know?
I was a little nervous to come out here with you all alone, you know.
Okay. Rumors of what I've done with other fishermen doesn't have anything to do with our relationship.
Well, I mean, we worked together for the last 14 years, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to blur that line between work.
No, exactly, exactly.
I feel something for you, and it's hard to say. When we're at work, I think you're okay. I think you're fine. And my buddy, I'm gonna make you mine.
Well, I'm a bit awkward. No one likes me at work. I'm the butt of a lot of jokes there. I didn't think you saw me that way. Huh. But you changed my mind. Someone likes me, that's fine. And I'm happy to say,
we're fishing buddies. That's a special bond. We're fishing buddies. It goes beyond. We're fishing buddies, buddies.
Really, really good friends.
Buddies, buddies.
We work at the same place.
Buddies, buddies.
Sometimes I take you out to lunch.
You and me. We're buddies, man. We can work together and be buddies too, I think.
Yeah. All right. So how was that for you, Rick?
Oh, wait, I was very enjoyable. There you go.
And what did we do? What did we do that worked, do you think, if we diagnose this?
I did a verse, then you did a verse, then I came up with a hook, a kind of a chorus, but it was more of just a hook, a simple hook. And then we're fishing buddies. Then you can insert your line. I left you room because on Zoom, it's hard to sing together. If we were together on stage, you sing, we're fishing buddies. Now that is true. And then we'd sing together. We're fishing buddies, just me and you. You know, then we could sing harmonies. But what we have to do on Zoom is hand it off back and forth. So I sing a little bit, you sing a little bit, and it's still that chorus or hook. And then it got us, and then we could go right on with the scene. So is it going to be awkward at work for you, Steve? I mean, that we're this close, you know?
Right.
Scene goes on from there.
So when you heard that, that's when you tapped into something emotional. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we were singing about our relationship and our emotions. We weren't saying, you know, the way you drive a forklift, when you stack things, you got to make sure we weren't doing exposition. You know, when you killed Larry with a hijack thing, you know, it tipped over. It wasn't, you know, we didn't get into a bunch of exposition. It was just about our relationship. Mm-hmm. And then it's a short little song. And we move right on to the scene. That was fun.
Yes, it was scary. Hey, Jim,
Jimmy, that was a great example because you each sang the form. You each sang, you know, the musician is sort of thinking structurally about the musical form, right? Mm-hmm. To make it kind of all glue together. Rick sang a verse. You mirrored the same verse. You weren't conscious necessarily that
no,
you were.
I wasn't.
That,
definitely right? wasn't.
But you did it because, you know, you just, it's like you heard it and then you imitated it, which is perfect. And then, so the structure for me, musician wise, was verse, verse, chorus. And then we kind of were repeating from that chorus to end. Beautiful structure. You weren't rhyming, but you were singing,
definitely not,
but you were singing the structure.
Yeah.
Right. So it still feels really musical. Even though you weren't rhyming, I think sometimes people think if I'm not rhyming, it's not going to be musical, but it was musical. We had this nice form that held together and feels musical. That, and then most importantly, your two characters sang their points of view. They told their stories, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, yay, we ticked all the boxes. And then if you rhyme too, fantastic, right?
Yeah, I didn't have a rhyme till right at the end of my verse, you know, but that's kind of the icing on the cake. If you, I've got a rhyme and I don't have to mix up some stupid rhyme that suddenly I've tried to rhyme with carafe and now I have a giraffe and that's got
to
be in the story.
And now the giraffe has to fit on the boat with you too.
Oh my God.
And so Rick, the ending of the song, which for me felt organic, how did you find the ending?
Exactly. It just felt like we did that little hook, you know, we're buddies, you and I, we're buddies. And then right into, well, I hope this doesn't affect our work relationship.
Mm-hmm. No, so and you went full circle with the scene. That was the beginning of the scene.
Right. We're back into the scene. So then we could go on from there. And then, you know, I will point out one thing. I was having a hard time following your chord progression.
Oh, really?
But I just kept singing. And because boy, when we start judging what we're doing, we're like, you know, and making those faces like, oh gosh, I'm terrible. Then you're telling the audience, wow, I'm terrible. I wasn't following her chord progression terrifically, but I committed to it.
Oh, you
layman, what does that mean, Rick? What does that mean? You weren't.
I felt like I sang like, we're gonna be, and she's not playing quite that.
Right.
Pitch wise, note-wise.
Yeah, I think sometimes we have an idea of how a song's going to go because of whatever we have in our heads. But then I played something different sort of than what his idea was. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, he's making the adjustment. But then when you sang, by the time we got to you, we'd already heard it. He'd made the adjustments. You did it just fine. Right. It's part of that give and take. It's like any scene. You know, you come in, you think you're going to be the dad and someone goes, oh, the priest is here. You're the priest now. You know what I mean? Like
you go from being the father to being the father.
Oh, look at that. Mm. But yeah, it's like all that give and take, all those adjustments that happen. But I would not have guessed that you couldn't hear the chord that you were having a hard time hearing.
I was making assumptions that I could hear it. I just wasn't following it real quick.
I got a question.
This too, Jimmy. When you're singing to tracks, you don't have the luxury of what Laura does or any other musical MD that's working with you, is Laura will change the chord progression. If you're just not getting it, she'll fix it for you sometimes. And when you're singing to tracks, you're more limited. You just don't have that flexibility. That's why when people say to Laura, oh, you're so lucky, you on Whose Line, you get to work with those really talented guys. Well, guess what? Laura's improvising too, okay?
Let me ask you, Laura, what do you think the impact of Whose Line has been to improv?
Well, one of the things that makes me so happy is especially I meet young adults like in their, you know, 20s and 30s who say, I grew up watching the show. My family watched it together, which really makes me so happy, you know, because when we were on ABC, everything was really clean. It was family friendly. And I do think I do meet people quite often who say, oh, Whose Line was my introduction to improv, which just so surprises me because to me, and I guess maybe it's growing up in Chicago or something, it's like, oh no, improv is way before Whose Line. I mean, I've had people even say, oh, Drew Carey invented improv, right?
Well, like, clearly it was Rick Hall.
It's like, oh no, there's a whole big long history. But what I do love is that it's inspired. I think it's inspired a lot of people to want to take classes, to want to try it, you know? And I love that. I've even met musicians who are like, I'm a musician because of you. You know, like that rocks my world. It makes me really happy.
You started out in Chicago. You were actually in the late 70s, right, Rick?
Rick was early 80s. We were both early 80s.
Early 80s.
Actually, I got hired into the cast and Laura was already the musical director. And I remember walking backstage, Donnie DiPolo called me on a Monday and he said, the touring company's doing a show tonight and you're in it. Go improvise with them. And I walked backstage and I'm like, okay, this is my cast. These are the... And then I was like, "Oh, I like that piano player."
And then that's how you guys met?
Yeah.
Was there like, "Oh, we got to keep this quiet." How did you do that, Rick?
Oh, well, we did keep it quiet.
We did keep it quiet. But here was the thing, because we were in the touring company together and we were on the road a lot, and I'm like, "Okay, we're in a crowded van with six other people. This is not the place to start a relationship." You know, like it felt too, you know, too much, too incestuous, too much all in a ball. So I was like, this can't happen. So we had a lot of back and forth of this can't happen.
We broke up several times. Yeah. Okay, we're never going to see each other again. And then
he got promoted to the main stage, and I was still in the touring company, and I was like, oh.
Now it's okay.
Yeah, now we're not in a crowded van together. If we have a fight, it's not like our whole cast is involved.
Did Joyce Sloan do that to keep you guys together?
She very well did. She may have. Actually, there were two couples, because Mark Belden and Madeline Mulatto got married out of that same cast. So there were two couples that came out of that cast.
If Joe Keefe and Kerry Goldenberg had gotten married, we'd have
we'd be everybody. All set.
I was actually at your wedding. It was
yes,
it was outside, I remember.
Yes, all our friends from The Annoyance were there. Yeah. Yeah. And then do you remember when we walked back down the aisle? So the recessional.
You're going to tell this?
I am going to tell
this. Please do.
My friend who I had asked to do the music for the wedding and like put the band together and arrange it, he said, I'm going to make a surprise for you for your recessional, and you can't hear it ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to do this, that's the price.
A
musical surprise. So he played a medley of songs from Co-Ed Prison Sluts. As our recessional.
Completely inappropriate.
But beautifully, like flute and piano, you know. And
not with it. The words, just the music,
not
right?
The words, just the music. Okay. So okay. It was like, you know, like I'm walking back going, wait, oh my God. And, you know, the few people in the annoyance people in the audience popping up laughing, going, oh my gosh, that's music from
Can you confirm this for me, Rick? At the reception, didn't freeze tag break out on the dance
yes.
floor? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
Oh, and you didn't go to our reception down on the farm in a week later at my mom's church, where she had my childhood friend and I sing friendship, and we were in straw hats, and it was crazy fun. But I think Laura's family thought, wow, these people are insane.
We've got to wrap this up, but I have a couple more questions. And one is, I'm going to ask this to both of you. Why do you think, because Rick, I don't remember you in Chicago as a musical improviser. So I would imagine Laura probably had an influence on that. Why do you think it's become so popular?
I think Whose Line has really tripped the trigger on that, because let's face it, Wayne Brady is probably the most gifted musical improviser I've ever met. And we've heard some pretty crazy good people, and worked with a lot of them. But to America or to the world, it's like, oh, that's what music improv is. I think it opened it up a lot of doors. That I will say this one thing about Whose Line that gives people the wrong impression is they don't see do any long form. Everything's in TV time, you know, 2 minute little scenes. And literally Laura's got to finish a song quick enough for the commercial break sometimes.
So it's short form, but it's like extra short form, you know, because of the nature of television.
But I think the music improv has really taken off, and part of it is Whose Line.
Were you also, Rick, because just regular improv, there was kind of a judgment of like, oh, it's cheap or whatever. Was there any, did you have any of that resistance
to doing musical
improv? Because kind of a purist, like, well, you know, I do long form. I don't do musical improv stuff.
Oh, no. I think most people are, the average person is scared of musical improv. And, to brag just a little bit, I think what we do really well as teachers is to make people feel comfortable just doing it, just telling a story and singing it. And we've had many students say to us, I'm terrified of this. And then afterwards, you're like, I did it. And we're like, yay.
You did it. And it was fun. And you did a great job. Yeah. I think also groups, just about the popularity of music improv, I think also groups like Baby Wants Candy. And, you know, here in LA, there's opening night, the improvised musical, you know, more and more groups. It's like the snowball thing that happens. Then you see a group do something like Baby Wants Candy and you're like, oh my gosh, I want to try that. So I think it's that sort of snowball that happens, that you see someone do it. And, but for a lot of people, even people that we know who have done improv for years and are really skilled, comfortable improvisers, somehow musical improv just really can bring out the fear factor. And so a big thing that we talk about always is it's like, it's just a continuation of your improv skills that you already have. It's, you're just adding to what you already have. It's not like you drop your improv skills and have to start over from scratch.
Matter of fact, if the more you keep scenes and relationships going and remember your improv skills, the easier it is to sing and having emotional content, you know, raising the emotion, either sad, funny, what, you know, anyway.
All right, so we're going to wrap this up. I'm going to go to Rick, and then we're going to end with Laura. Okay. One piece of advice you would give to an improviser starting out today?
Can Laura go first? don't think ahead. Just be in the moment and react. I've said some of the most amazing things when I wasn't thinking, but my character was.
How do you get to that point? I mean, it's...
Some of the best improvisers I've worked with are trained actors. Richard Kind was a trained actor.
Megan Fay,
you know, people like that that really know how to build a character and own the character and stay with the character. And if you're really into a character, your character will say things that Jimmy Corrine would never say, you know, and good or bad, I don't know, but it's honest. So know your characters and work on them.
And Laura, one thing you would, one piece of advice you'd give an improviser starting out today?
I would say similarly. And for me, one of the things, especially around the fear of doing musical improv, is I feel like it's like, you know, feel that fear and go, okay, I'm nervous now. I'm anxious now. I'm feeling not good enough, whatever those things are, acknowledge it and say, okay, I'm going to do it anyway. You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of like, you know, learning how to ski. You're at the top of the mountain and you're like, I'm nervous. I'm afraid I might fall, but I'm going to go down anyway. So I'm going to do my best and I'm just going to put that fear wherever it needs to go so that I can be engaged in what I'm doing.
But if you do improv badly, you probably won't break your leg.
There you go.
But you also raise a point. If you've been, let's say you've been improvising for 7 years or something, you have never done musical improv. Well, you're going to have to suck at that for a while before you get good. Do those credits transfer necessarily?
Like I was saying, it does to some extent. It definitely does, because the things that build a good scene build a good song. Now, you may have to work on, depending on, you know, your musical skills, you may have to work on rhythm or pitch or kind of getting used to how does what I sing fit in with the form of the music, right? But the interesting thing is most of us have more intuitive ability to do that than we realize. Again, I'll go back to when Rick sang his verse, you mirrored his verse without consciously thinking about it, without knowing, oh, that was 16 bars and that was the chord progression, la, la, la. You just did it because we've all grown up listening to music. We have music in our bones. So sometimes it's really just allowing yourself to access the musicianship that you have and not getting in your own way.
We did Laura's improv karaoke. We launched it at the Fanatic Salon in Culver City, and we asked some really good improvisers, veterans veteran improvisers to come and do it. And John Kapalos was nervous about doing it. He goes, I don't know if I'm going to do it. And he came and had so much fun. As a matter of fact, Ruthie Rudnick was in the audience and she goes, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And about halfway through the show, I said, Ruthie, do you want to come up? She was like, yes, yes. So that kind of spontaneous excitement is like, yeah, let's just do it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where people tend to have more of a, it's their own fear. It's their own fear that's the barrier. And that if they try it, a lot of times they discover like, oh, not only can I do this, but this is really fun. You know, it's just, it's like anything. It's making the leap. Sort of say it, feel the fear, right? And go through it.
Well, thank you, Rick and Laura Hall. Thank you for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jimmy.
And there you have it, another great episode of Improv Nerd. I want to thank our guests, Laura Hall and Rick Hall. And if you want to get more information or to sign up, go to her website, laurahall.com. That's laurahall.com for her musical guide to improv comedy. That's an online video course. That's laurahall.com. And it's a really fun website, and check it out. And really, if you're in a smaller market right now and you have somebody who might want to play a piano and they need some training, this is a great investment for your, if you're a group out there you don't have somebody who can help you with your music and improv, go to laurahall.com for her musical guide to improv comedy. I also want to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He is one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you would not be hearing my voice right now. Also, I want to thank Lauren Corain, head of interns, for all she does for Improv Nerd. And also, if you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning classes, workshops, books, episodes of this podcast, go to my website, jimmycorain.com, and check out my online classes, The Art of Slow Comedy. That's The Art of Slow Comedy. I do online classes and workshops. Also, follow us on Twitter, improv_nerd, and please like our Improv Nerd Facebook page because it really helps with my low self-esteem. And I want to thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, walk, don't run.